Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY listening app or many streaming services. Today is December 10th, 2025. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 48,057, the NASDAQ at 23,654, and the S&P at 6,886. And the Fed cut interest rates another 0.25%. Our topic tonight is year-end tax planning and charitable giving. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down and bring it in. Email is also available through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So you could submit questions or show ideas through that website. So talking about year-end tax planning, it almost feels a little late, doesn't it? December 10th. But you would not believe how much tax planning we still can do with 21 days left in the year. And some people do wait until then to do some of the tax planning. What I really would hope by now in the theme of be proactive, not reactive, is that you've already done your tax planning. But I thought it still might be important to talk about some tax planning opportunities that still may be available to people who have, you know, kind of waited on a few things. So I want to talk about that. I also just want to talk about some of the tax changes, recent tax legislation, the One Big Beautiful Bill, and, you know, kind of put it on the radar as to what those changes were. And if you hadn't caught up to understand what they were for this year, it may help you in planning for next year. So this is an opportunity to think about these, you know, these items that may impact you so that you can be ahead of the any decisions or planning that you might be able to do in 2026. And also, I want to talk about charitable giving tonight if people have not finished their charitable giving, because I do hear from many, many clients that they tend to do their charitable giving at the end of the year, quite often around the holidays. I myself, we usually do it around Thanksgiving. It's always my clue to do it, you know, little gifts during the year, but the big giving, usually around Thanksgiving, because that's my reminder, that's my trigger. Thanksgiving, be thankful, and giving back. But again, some people do it toward the end of the year because they want to see where, you know, the rest of their income falls or whatever it might be. So I'm going to talk about some the increase in the standard deduction, continuation on tax rates that were supposed to sunset, expiring credits. And I thought I would also talk about understanding tax rates a little bit because, you know, I think sometimes there's an assumption that people understand that. And sometimes people don't want to ask the question, that people don't want to look, you know, ignorant. And so they may not ask questions. I never mind looking ignorant or asking questions. So hopefully it might, you know, kind of help people understand their own tax planning. So one of the things I think I'll start with, and then I'm going to talk about some of the new legislation, no tax on tips, and I want to talk about what that means, because sometimes we hear these broad statements and we make assumptions about those broad statements. So when we hear, oh, no tax on tips, we think it's, you know, across the board. Well, there's certain criteria. No tax on overtime. Well, guess what? There's certain criteria. There's a new enhanced senior deduction. Oh, guess what? You know, there's criteria on that. It's interesting to me, though, because I have, you know, in talking to clients, many of them come in assuming they're not going to get any of these things because I guess they've learned over time, over the years, that sometimes these tax benefits do have, you know, handcuffs on them or limitations or whatever it might be to keep them from getting them. So it's nice to talk about it, but it may not always be applicable to you. And then I want to round up also talking about charitable giving and the different ways that you can do that and how even that charitable giving may be able to help you in some of the tax planning that you still may be able to do or might do next year. So in the one big, beautiful bill provisions, the biggest thing I want to take away or mention is that the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act lowered tax rates that were supposed to sunset after 2025. So what we were looking at and what we were having to plan for were tax provisions that were established in 2017 that were going to sunset in 2026. And that was because the tax legislation could only apply, I think, for a 10-year period. So it was going to sunset. Everyone was thinking, what's going to happen? And I would say under either administration, the talk was, whether it was a Democrat or a Republican, the concept was they were going to keep those rates for people making under $400,000 anyway. It would be people making more than that that may have been subjected to the sunset in the tax rates. Well, that didn't happen. This administration came through, and the tax rates were updated under the One Big Beautiful Bill to extend the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act tax rates. So the tax rates did not sunset to the old. They just continued to be what they are. So I've had some people come in and say, am I benefiting from the tax cuts? Probably not, they say. Well, I said, you know, when you're high income, like seriously high income, yes, you did benefit because the tax rates are not sunsetting next year. So in 2025, they would have been the same. It was supposed to sunset in 2026. So they will benefit next year for, you know, until legislation changes this again. So there were tax benefits to, you know, very high income earners where the tax rates were extended. The other big thing that was extended was the federal estate tax exemption. So if this doesn't apply to almost, you know, most of us, it's like less than 1% of the people, I think, have a federal estate tax issue. But I'm going to tell you why this still could be important for some of us. The federal estate exemption this year, I think, is $13.96 million. And it was supposed to sunset back to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act exemption, which with inflation probably would have brought it to about $7 million. So if someone had an estate of $7 million or less, next year, they probably wouldn't have had a federal estate tax. If it was more than that, they would have. So that would have been under the sunset. Married, family, joint, you get each of those. Each person gets an exemption of that amount. Well, they technically, in quotes, extended the higher exemption, and it's going to $15 million per person in 2026. I'm at my first break, and when we come back, I'm going to tell you why this could be important for people who pass away this year or for people who pass away next year or maybe even the next year, as long as this legislation applies. Because remember, I said in quotes, permanent. We're going to talk about what that means. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about year-end tax planning and charitable giving, and I'm giving an overview of the new tax legislation and why I want folks to pay attention to something that I'm going to say about this federal estate tax exemption. I said it hardly applies to most of us. It's like less than 1% of the population, the federal estate tax exemption, because most of us don't have estates of 15 million or 30 million, married, filing, joint. That's what the exemption is going to go to. As I said, it could have sunsetted. It could have gone to a much lower amount, 7 million probably with inflation per person, maybe 14 million. So that even sounds like quite a big number and doesn't apply to a lot of people. But over time, it's not as big as you might think. 30 million sounds pretty big for a married filing joint. 14 million, maybe not as big. But here's what you need to pay attention to. The federal estate tax exemption, if you're married and a spouse passes away, you can file to be able to keep that exemption for the surviving spouse without losing it. So for example, if I have a couple and maybe their net worth is $5 million and one spouse passes away in 2026, you have no federal estate tax filing requirement, you know, generally, assuming there's no like lifetime gifting over a certain amount. So let's assume you would have no federal estate tax filing requirement. Spouse dies, you have $5 million net worth together. This is in 2026. You don't have to file. But there's something called portability where you could say, I want to use my spouse's lifetime exemption. I don't want them to lose it. They passed away just because they didn't have to file. I don't want them to lose that exemption for us as a family. You can file a federal estate tax return to claim portability of that deceased spouse unused exemption. So let's pretend it's in 2026. My net worth is $5 million. My spouse, maybe everything was joint. I put it on the federal estate tax return, joint $5 million worth of assets. Everything passes to spouse in my story here. They never had to use any of the $15 million exemption. Surviving spouse is going to file for portability. And let's say the spouse is the wife. So now the wife has this $15 million that the husband didn't use. Or spouse didn't use, I should say. And now let's pretend that spouse was 62 years old and they could live another 30 years. There's a chance that $5 million could grow 10, 50, 20, you know, if in 30 years, it could go from 5 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30. If the exemption changes at some point in the future, because remember, tax legislation can change. Just because they say it's permanent doesn't mean it's permanent. It's until it gets changed, you know, the next time. So if the federal estate exemption drops or freezes and doesn't go up, maybe they freeze it in 4 years under new, you know, a political party or something. Well, if my exemption in 30 years from 62 to age 92, if my exemption, you know, was now, you know, 15 million and I never filed for that exemption, for that portability, my estate, I said, is worth 30, 30. I went from 5 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30. And my exemption's 15, personally. I would still have exposure of 15 million. But if I had filed for portability, I would have my husband's 15 million and my 15 million, and the 30 million gets exempted. All right. Sounds complicated, but you want to think about whether or not you need to file for this election for portability in estates that may not have a federal estate filing requirement. If you think there's any chance that the estate could have some exposure in the future, X number of years. Now, in my story, the surviving spouse was young, 62, could have a life expectancy of, 30 years, 35 years, even 40 years could be. Could there be a chance that it could grow? It doesn't hurt to file for portability. It's probably one of the easiest tax returns to file for portability, because you just have to use round numbers for reporting the assets, et cetera. So that is something really big that most people don't know about. And you want to kind of perk your ears up if you have family members, aunts, uncles, grandma, grandpa, mom or dad who pass away. And you don't like to have to think about these things, but if there's like a pending lawsuit, so maybe they died in an accident and you're suing for, $20 million, there could be a chance that the surviving spouse could end up having a high federal estate. So if you don't file, you don't get to use that unused exemption of the other spouse. So that's where that works. It's spouses. Okay. So that's a big deal. The federal estate exemption going up, because back in 2020, when everyone thought perhaps there were proposals that the federal estate exemption was going to go down to 3 million. Well, there are a lot more people who have estates the size of 3 million. So it would be even important in those circumstances to elect that portability. At that time, we were told they were not going to claw it back, that if someone passed away and they elected the portability, they were going to be able to keep, the surviving spouse was going to be able to keep it. There are some complications, I think, if one marries again, but just kind of keep this in mind. It's all part of the planning to think ahead and make sure you consider all these things. So, and then let me just talk about the extended tax rates. And I want to make sure that people understand tax rates. So the income tax rates can be zero. They can be 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%, 37%. It just gets more and more complicated every time they want to make it simpler. So as they make it simpler, it actually gets more complicated. And so when I say zero, what do I mean by that? Well, first of all, there could be a zero rate on things like capital gains, long-term capital gains or qualified dividends, if those qualified dividends and long-term capital gains are in the 12% tax bracket. That's zero. Another way, what I would call zero, would be, to the extent you have income that's under a standard deduction or under, if you itemize. So you might have income that's reported on your tax return, but if you have a standard deduction or itemized deductions that offset that income, then technically that would be a zero if it completely offset it. All right. Then the 10% tax bracket for single individuals is $12,400 or less. And for married filing joint is $24,800 or less. But that is taxable income after the standard deduction or itemized deduction. So again, if the standard deduction for a single person in 2025 is $15,750 and their income is $28,000, then only $12,000 of that's going to be taxed at 10%. So it's not all getting taxed. So the effective tax rate on that much income would not be 10% because you're getting the standard deduction as well. I'm going to talk more about these tax rates when we come back from the break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Introducing Home for the Holidays. Tis the season to shop small and share big. A special 8-episode podcast. Each week, we'll spotlight local makers and retail stores that make our region shine and show how shopping small keeps local dollars close to home. Tune in, get inspired, and join the hashtag BuyLocal movement. Listen at WDIY.org, watch on our YouTube channel, or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. Back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about tax planning, year-end tax planning, and charitable giving. And I'm starting off by just kind of explaining a little bit about changes in the tax law with the federal exemption and then the tax rates that they are not sunsetting. And just a little extra explanation about tax rates. And I think it's important in tax planning that people understand how the tax rates work. So when I mentioned single filers, 10% bracket, $11,600 or less, 2025 numbers, and married filing joint, 23.2, that's 10% on that amount less. That's taxable income after either a standard deduction or itemized deduction. Okay. Then the 12% bracket for married filing joint is between $23,200 and $94,300. And for single, $11,600 and $47,000. All right. So that 12% bracket, again, should be factoring in the standard deduction and everything. So if the standard deduction for a married filing joint couple is, I'm just for ease, I'm going to say $33,000. And if the 12% bracket in my story, again, for married filing joint, if I'm using them as my example, what did I say for married filing joint? Standard deduction, I'm going to call it $31,000. So 94 and 31. That's $125,000 of income, less the standard deduction, could keep you in the 12% tax bracket. And remember, I said the capital gains and the qualified dividends would be taxed at zero. So when we talk about tax planning, sometimes that's really important for you to know. And because you may be able to keep yourself in the 12% bracket by, you know, maybe making 401k contributions, which lowers your taxable income, or you could... If your income is from IRAs, you could do charitable distributions from your IRA. If you're 70 and a half or older, it's called qualified charitable distributions to lower your income. And you might be able to lower it to that 12% bracket to get that zero tax rate. The other thing that's happening this year, and I'm going to jump ahead in my head a little bit here, because I did want to talk about this enhanced senior deduction as well. The enhanced senior deduction was something, a new provision in the tax law that said what they were trying to get was to make Social Security not reportable as taxable income. And that did not work because it would take different kinds of legislation. So in lieu of that, they came up with this enhanced senior deduction to give each individual 65 or older an extra $6,000 deduction, but it only applies under certain income limitations. So without jumping too much further ahead, what I wanted to say is if you can manage your income on your tax return, you could, if you thought you were not going to be eligible for that deduction, or maybe that deduction was going to be limited, there could be ways for you to kind of manage the income on your tax return as well to bring the income down within the thresholds where you would still get some of the senior deduction. So I have a number of clients, their income's too high. They're not getting the senior deduction at all. But they'll take the high income. but there are times where you might be like on the cusp, or you might be thinking about doing a conversion. And I saw that. I think I saw blurbs, you know, like marketing people saying, oh, you can do the conversion now with the higher standard deduction and the enhanced senior deduction and this and that. But, you know, sometimes, a lot of times, in fact, it's a circular calculation. If you think you're going to do a conversion because you say, oh, I've got this bigger deduction now this year, I have an extra $12,000 deduction. That sounds great. I think I'm going to do a Roth conversion. Well, you go to do the Roth conversion, and what you forgot to think about was, oops, I have Social Security on my tax return, and Social Security gets included in taxable income, depending on how much other income you have on your return. So Social Security can be included up to 85%. But it can be lower, and there's certain thresholds. It's a horrible worksheet you have to go through to see if, you know, how much of your Social Security is going to be included in taxable income. But if you do a conversion, sometimes that drives that up. So for example, if I, in my little case study, maybe where I'm going to do a conversion, if I put $10,000 on the tax return, because you're thinking, oh, I'm getting this extra $12,000 deduction. So you put $10,000 on the tax return, and actually what goes on the tax return might be $18,500 because it's that much more Social Security ends up getting taxable. And then that may or may not eat into your enhanced senior deduction. All right. So for a number of clients where we ordinarily would be talking about doing Roth conversion, so IRA money converting to Roth when we're in a low tax bracket, like a 12% bracket or even sometimes the 22% bracket, we may not be doing it now because we want to take advantage of that enhanced senior deduction. If someone's in a 12% tax bracket and a conversion is going to cost them 22%, you know, effective tax rate, may not be worth it. And the enhanced senior deduction isn't going to be around forever. I think it's only going to be around for, you know, a few years. So, you know, take advantage of it perhaps when we can. So the tax rate, just be aware of that when someone says they're in the 24% tax. Oh, this is another example I wanted to give you. If someone says they're in the 32% tax bracket, married, filing, joint, the income's $403,000, taxable income over $403,000. That sounds like a lot. They think, oh, I'm in the 32% tax bracket. But when you look under the hood, they may not be in the 32% tax bracket at all. Because if of their $403,000, it all comes from qualified dividends and long-term capital gains, lucky them, it's not the 32% tax bracket at all. It's more like 15% tax bracket plus a 3.8% net investment income tax, you know, and then there's some ordinary income. I'm kind of giving an extreme example and an extreme example that not everybody walks around with $400,000 of dividends and qualified long-term capital gains, but I have seen it. It does happen. And sometimes they think they're in a high tax bracket. And when I break it down, I say to them, no, not really. Your effective tax rate on your money is only 18%. It's very, very different than tax rates on ordinary income. So if I had that same $400,000 of taxable income and I had no qualified dividends and I had no long-term capital gains, well then, yeah, I might be, you know, in this case, it'd probably be the 24% tax bracket. But if I go over that, it might be the 32. Ordinary income gets taxed at whatever, you know, marginal tax bracket you're in. This is a better way to think about it. The next, you know, $10,000 of income is going to be taxed at what marginal rate? Because remember, some gets taxed at 10, some gets taxed at 12. It's like a layered cake. Some gets taxed at 22. And when you start going higher, 24, 32, we really still have very low income tax rates. But not all of your income might be taxed at those ordinary rates. Some of it could be taxed at the lower capital gains tax rate. Okay, for long-term capital gains and qualified dividends. So just be really aware of that. And I think when you're aware of it, part of the tax planning, again, can I take these gains? Are these gains going to be taxed at 0%? Are they going to be taxed at 15%? Or if I'm in the top tax bracket, are they going to be taxed at 20%? Often people hear these blurbs like, oh, income tax on capital gains, 20%. That's only really on the top earners people. It's for the most part, 15, maybe an extra 3.8 if you're married filing joint and your income's over 250. You might have a 3.8 on that excess investment income, but still, you know, very attractive income tax rates on gains, etc. Okay, we are at the halfway point. I can't believe it already. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you have questions, you can call in, talk live with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live, give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and bring it in. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're welcome back. A couple other quick notes before I talk about the tip income and the overtime income, and that is on the clean energy tax credits that we've had for many, many years. Those are expiring, so they are expiring on the new clean vehicle credit. The credit will not be allowed for any vehicle acquired after September 30th, 2025. Used clean vehicle credit not allowed with respect to any vehicle acquired after September 30th, 2025. Expiring home energy credits, energy efficient home improvement credits. The credit will not be allowed for any property placed in service after December 31st, 2025. The residential clean energy credit will not be allowed for any expenditures made after December 31st, 2025. So there had been some provisions many, many years ago. We had these credits and then they capped them. It was a lifetime credit or cap. Then they took off the lifetime cap just recently and people were able to, you know, replace their windows again or use, you know, for extra windows, extra doors, whatever it might be. But now, as of, you know, this year with under the new tax bill, those credits are going to be gone. So what I have said to people is if you've contracted for new windows, energy efficient, they still have to be energy efficient windows or doors. What else? Renewable energy, wind, solar, that type of thing. All of these credits are expiring at the end of this year. So if you had them, make sure you give it to your tax preparer so they can claim the credits. Sometimes the cost is really, you know, quite high for the credit that you're going to get for it, but it's still something. The bigger credit typically had been for like solar or, you know, renewable types of energy improvements, which was like 30%. That is a big, big tax credit. Some people are trying to scramble to get some of their, you know, their solar panels put on their house now. But some of these companies are so busy because they know that these credits are going to expire. So now they're busy trying to, for people who were on the fence about doing it, now we're compelled to kind of try to get it done quickly. So now these companies have become very busy and may not be able to get it done by the end of the year. You still will have, you know, energy benefits from it and energy cost savings going forward, but you may not get tax credits. So keep that in mind if you did do any to make sure that you let your accountant know so you get credit for those improvements because they are going away and you won't get them anymore. Now let's talk about the no tax on tips. That also has a lot of, you know, kind of, what do I want to say? Details behind it. So let me read directly from the IRS's website, their fact sheet on this. The new deduction effective for 2025 through 2028, employees and self-employed individuals may deduct qualified tips received in occupations that are listed by the IRS as customarily and regularly receiving tips on or before December 31st, 2024. And that are reported on a Form W-2, Form 1099, or other specified statement furnished to the individual or reported directly by the individual on Form 4137. Qualified tips are, listen to this, if you're someone who gets tips or maybe your child gets tips or you get tips, qualified tips are voluntary cash or charged tips received from customers or through tip sharing The maximum annual deduction is $25,000 for self-employed. Deduction may not exceed the individual's net income without regard to this deduction from the trade or business in which the tips were earned. The deduction phases out for taxpayers with modified adjusted gross income over $150,000 if you're single and $300,000 for joint filers. The deduction is available for both itemizing and non-itemizing taxpayers. Self-employed individuals in a specified service, trade, or business under Section 199A are not eligible. Employees whose employer is in an SSTB, so I believe that's a specified service, trade, or business, also are not eligible. Taxpayers must include their Social Security number on the return and file jointly if married to claim the deduction. Now, they have some other provisions here. Employers for reporting. Employers and other payers must file information returns with the IRS and furnish statements to taxpayers showing certain cash tips received and the occupation of the tip recipient. But here's the thing. Because this guidance just came out, you know, late, the IRS realizes that, you know, employers may not be able to comply with the reporting of this because, you know, it's going backwards, you know, before the legislation was put into place when I don't know how people might have been tracking it. But furthermore, because there's particular occupations, the IRS was to publish a list of occupations that customarily and regularly receive tips on or before December 31st, 2024. The reason I keep saying, you know, customarily before, you know, December 31st, 2024, and why they put that in there, my guess is because they didn't want businesses all of a sudden to start calling everything tips. Oh, hey, I'm not going to pay you wages. I'm going to pay you tips. And you can get $25,000 tax-free. So they kind of, you know, I think tried to, you know, mitigate that by saying it had to be customarily done. Now, let me see. I printed off what they said was customarily occupations. So Treasury tipped occupation code. They did publish it. They provided a 3-digit code and description for the occupations listed within the proposed regulations. And they grouped the occupations into 8 categories. Beverage and food service, we would expect that. Entertainment and events, hospitality and guest services. So I would expect that would be like hotels, perhaps. Home services, personal appearance and wellness, recreation and instruction, transportation and delivery. So those are what they call the occupations that would have, you know, regular and customarily tip-like income. And in order to claim the deduction, a worker must both be in an occupation on the list and receive qualified tips, okay? So already we see some restrictions on the type of work you're doing. It has to be within certain categories. And now we've got another word, qualified tips. So let's see what we mean by that. The proposed regulations provide a definition of qualified and not qualified tips, which includes the following factors. Qualified tips must be paid in cash or an equivalent medium, such as check, credit card, debit card, gift card, tangible or intangible tokens that are readily exchangeable for a fixed amount in cash or another form of electronic settlement or mobile payment application, excluding most digital assets denominated in cash. Well, frankly, that to me is already hard to understand. Qualified tips must be received from customers or, in the case of an employee, through a mandatory or voluntary tip sharing arrangement, such as a tip pool. Okay, I've never worked in an industry that does tipping. I don't know. Maybe that means when you get your tip, you throw it in the jar and then you have to share it with, you know, the people who bust the tables and the cooks. I don't know, but that might be what that means. Now, qualified tips must be voluntary by the customer. Okay, this is, I think, important, and not be subject to negotiation. What? Qualified tips do not include some service charges. For instance, in the case of a restaurant that imposes an automatic 18% service charge for large parties and distributes that amount to waiters, bussers, and kitchen staff. If the charge is added with no option for the customer to disregard or modify it, the amounts distributed to the workers from it are not qualified tips. Any amount received for illegal activity, blah, 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 is also not a qualified tip. So I thought that was really interesting. And I'm thinking, who is going to keep track of this? This to me is, quite the burden of, accounting for these types of things. So the, restaurants, the diners, whatever, might have to keep track of when the tip is automatically included. Like on parties, typically I see if you have a party of six or more, they might put an automatic tip down. Certain restaurants, it might be eight people. I don't know. But if the tip's automatically included, then that is not going to qualify for the tip. Now, I don't know how some people report tips. If you're getting cash, do they run back and make a list, for their employer to say, hey, here's the tips? And I believe that it's just not subject to federal tax. It should technically still be subject to the Social Security and Medicare tax. Again, I'm not very familiar with tip income, but that's kind of some of the provisions around it. And it's probably a little bit more complicated than one might think. So the Treasury also provided penalty relief for tax year 2025 for information reporting on tips. So remember I said, gosh, this could get complicated for the employers. Well, the IRS recognizes it could get complicated. It might take them a little while to figure out how to do this. So they're giving them some transition penalty relief. But once they get through this transition penalty relief for 2025, the employers are going to have to do the reporting in 2026 or be subject to penalties for not doing it properly. So Notice 2025-62 provides penalty relief from the new information reporting requirements for cash tips and qualified overtime compensation. So there's going to be reporting requirements for the overtime too, which I'll talk about in a minute, because there's, restrictions around that too. And other payers for not filing correct information returns and not providing correct payee statements to employees and other payees. So employers and other payers will not face penalties for failing to provide a separate accounting of any amounts reasonably designated as cash tips or the occupation of the person receiving such tips. They will not face penalties for failing to separately provide the total amount of also qualified overtime. The relief is limited to returns and statements filed and provided for the tax year 2025 and applies only to the extent that the person required to make the return or statement otherwise files and provides a complete and correct return or statement. And it goes on and on. So it's almost too complicated, but this could be a big thing for people. So I do want to make sure that you're aware of it. New reporting says no tax on tips. Certain employees and self-employed individuals who receive qualified tips may deduct qualified tips that are reported on a Form W-2, reported directly by the individual on Form 4137, and the payers and employers are supposed to be providing that information. I also want to give you a little update on the overtime, because that's not as obvious as one would think either, and I'll do that after this next break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. And we're talking about kind of year-end tax planning. It's really more year-end tax understanding. And hopefully I can talk a little bit about charitable giving before the end of the show. I didn't realize I was going to talk so much about all these little enhancements with the tax and changes with the tax bill. But next week, I'm also going to talk about year-end financial planning takeaways. You know, what kind of takeaways do we have for financial planning? And I can also talk about charitable giving next week as well, if I don't get to it by the end of the show today. So let me talk about this no tax on overtime. So remember, don't take anything as a blanket statement. This is always why I warn about being proactive and not reactive. You want to be in front of your decisions. You want to make sure you understand, you know, what you have in front of you. And if you take a blanket statement like, oh, my tips aren't taxed or my overtime's not taxed, it may not be exactly what you think. And let me give you a quick example. So let's pretend you worked 43 hours for the week and you were only supposed to work 40. So you had 3 hours of overtime. And maybe for that overtime, normally you get paid $10 an hour regular pay. And for overtime, you're getting paid $15 an hour. So $15 an hour, you worked 3 extra hours, I said. That would be $45. And you think, oh, my overtime pay was $45. And you think, great, I can exclude that from my taxable income. But that is not the case. We have to read the fine print. New deduction effective for 2025 through 2028. Individuals who receive qualified overtime compensation, again, qualified, whenever you start hearing these words, you got to think, oh, ding, 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 got to pay attention. Qualified overtime compensation may deduct the pay that exceeds their regular rate of pay, such as the half portion of time and a half. So that time and a half compensation that's required by the Fair Labor Standards Board, Fair Labor Standards Act, and that is reported on Form W-2 or Form 1099. So again, there's going to be a requirement of the employers to report this. Maybe they didn't have to track it before. I don't know how employers track overtime. If they keep, you know, a list, or if they just pay it, they can print out a report from their payroll. Maybe they can. That's what is going to have to start happening so that they can report it on the W-2. But let's go back to my little example. So we said they make $10 an hour. They work 40 hours a week. They work an extra 3 hours on the weekend. They get paid $15 an hour instead of $10. They made $45 of overtime, enough to buy, you know, breakfast. And the amount that you get to exclude on your tax return is $15. Okay? Big difference in your mind when you think overtime excluded, qualified overtime, it's only the difference. It's the amount over the regular compensation. The deduction is available for both itemizing and non-itemizing taxpayers. Taxpayers must include their Social Security number on the return. Like, you can't even file a tax return without including your Social Security number. I think I know what they're trying to get at there. File jointly if married to claim the deduction. So reporting, employers and other payers are required to file information returns with the IRS and furnish statements to taxpayers showing the total amount of qualified overtime compensation paid during the year. Guidance, the IRS will provide transition relief, which I've already read, for tax year 2025 for taxpayers claiming the deduction and for employers and other payers subject to the new reporting requirements. All right. So yeah, it looks like you're getting tax-free tip income, but it depends. And it depends on how much money you make. It depends on how much the tip income is. It depends on how the tip income is reported. It has to be qualified tip income. And same thing with the overtime. It's only on the difference between the regular pay and what you were actually paid for the overtime. There is also a new deduction, no tax on car loan interest. There's a new deduction for 25 through 28. Individuals may deduct interest paid on a loan used to purchase a qualified vehicle. Qualified, ding, ding, ding. Provided the vehicle is purchased for personal use and meets other eligibility criteria. Ding, ding, ding. Meets other eligibility criteria. Lease payments do not qualify. Maximum annual deduction is $10,000. The deduction phases out for taxpayers with modified adjusted gross income over $100,000 if you're single and $200,000 for joint filers. Qualified interest. To qualify for the deduction, the interest must be paid on a loan that is originated after December 31st, 2024. So a loan that is originated after December 31st, 2024. So you might be thinking, oh, no tax on car loan interest. I have car loan interest, maybe. I've been 2 years into my loan. Well, 2 years ago, no, it's not going to qualify. It has to be used to purchase a vehicle, the original use of which starts with the taxpayer. Used vehicles do not qualify. For a personal use vehicle, not for business. And it has to be secured by a lien on the vehicle. If a qualifying vehicle loan is later refinanced, interest paid on the refinanced amount is generally eligible for the deduction. So it had to be a qualifying vehicle, meaning you can't go, if you bought a car 2 years ago and you think you can refinance it to now get it, no, the qualifying vehicle had to be, you know, originated after December 31st, 2024. Qualified vehicle is a car, minivan, van, SUV, pickup truck, motorcycle with a gross vehicle weight rating of less than 14,000 pounds and, ding, 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 has undergone final assembly in the United States. Final assembly in the United States. The location will be listed on the vehicle information label attached to each vehicle on a dealer's premises. Alternatively, taxpayers may rely on the vehicle's plant of manufacture as reported in the VIN on, you know, your vehicle identification number to determine whether a vehicle has undergone final assembly in the United States. And there is a website for the National Highway Safety Administration that provides plant or manufacturer information. And, you know, there's a link for that in the IRS's website, and they call it VIN Decoder. Taxpayers can follow instructions on that website to determine if the vehicle's plant of manufacture was located in the United States. Now, oh, there's some other things. Deductions available for both itemizing and not itemizing. The taxpayer must include the VIN number of the qualified vehicle. Lenders, for reporting, lenders or other recipients of qualified interest must file information returns to the IRS and furnish statements to taxpayers showing the total amount of interest received during the taxable year. And, of course, the IRS will provide transition relief for tax year 2025 for interest recipients subject to the new reporting requirements. So, again, you know, ding, ding, ding on all of these things for qualified. You want to make sure you understand what qualifies and what doesn't. But I just want to give a quick planning note, which I actually could talk about next week. Remember, it has to be a new vehicle, and the loan interest, you know, could be up to $10,000. But maybe it is smarter for you to buy a used car, pay less money, not have a, you know, maybe you have interest and you're not going to get a deduction for it. Don't buy a brand new car for $45,000 with a high interest rate loan just to get an interest rate deduction when you might have been able to buy a car for half the amount of money and maybe still have a loan. In the end, you're still going to be out of pocket less than maybe the tax savings you would have gotten on the interest. Okay. That was a quick, I can give a better example next week. Because I want to make sure I talk about this deduction for seniors. So the new deduction for this enhanced senior deduction, effective for 2025 through 2028, individuals who are age 65 and older may claim an additional deduction of $6,000. The new deduction is in addition to the current standard deduction that went up a little bit. The $6,000 senior deduction is per individual. Eligible individual, $12,000 for a married couple where both spouses qualify. Deduction phases out for taxpayers with modified adjusted income over $75,000 if you're single and $150,000 for joint filers. Qualifying taxpayers to qualify for the additional deduction. A taxpayer must attain age 65 on or before the last day of the taxable year. And taxpayer eligibility, it's available for both itemizing and non-itemizing taxpayers. They must include their Social Security number on the tax return, and if married, file jointly if married to claim the deduction. Now, I said there's a minimum amount. There's a phase out. So for single head of households qualifying widower or married filing separate, the phase out threshold is $75,000, and it's fully phased out by $175,000. So between $75,000 and $175,000, that's $100,000, there's a phase out, and it's 6% of the income above the threshold. So if you're if you're page one, modified adjusted gross income is $85,000 for a single person, your $10,000 over times 6%, that would be $600, gets phased out. You would $6,000 minus $600, you would still get $5,400. Okay. For married, filing and joint, $150,000, the fully phased out by $250,000. So there's a difference there. The singles get a bigger phase out, 75 to 175. Married, filing, joint, it's 150 to 250, and it's 6% per eligible person. So if you're over the threshold there, $10,000, you're over 6% times 10 is $600 per person. So that would come down 1,200. So 12,000 less 1,200. All right. So when we talk about that deduction, I alluded to this earlier, we may want to preserve that deduction while it's available, 2025, 2026, 27, 28. Tax planning, again, is, as I said, as unique as your thumbprint, and it could be different for everybody. There may be reasons why you still would do, for example, a conversion from an IRA to a Roth. Maybe you'd miss out on the senior enhanced deduction, but maybe you're taking advantage of low tax rates before you, file for Social Security, perhaps, or before you, start taking pensions, or before you have an inherited IRA that you have to, get out of because you have to do it within 10 years. So there could be other reasons why you still would do other tax planning despite the enhanced credit. But to the extent it makes sense, you might want to look to see if that applies to you. And this bothers me when I see, blanket statements across media that it says, oh, great, with this extra deduction, you can do, more conversions now. Well, you just can't make these blanket statements because it depends on your circumstances. It could also maybe help you get some of your capital gains and qualified dividends at a zero rate. Perhaps that extra enhanced senior deduction brings your income down into the 12% tax bracket. And when you hit into the 12% tax bracket, that stuff gets taxed at zero. So it's kind of like the synergy of it. So it all depends on each person's circumstance and situation. And, I also tell clients, sometimes it is what it is. If you need money and you have to take money out, we have to realize gains and you lose the benefit of that extra enhanced deduction. Sometimes it just is what it is, but to the extent that we can plan and take advantage of it, that would be great. Perhaps you might have one spouse who's still working in 65 and the other one's retired. If this one spouse is working and it could make a difference in, making you eligible for the enhanced credit, you could always look and see how much you're withholding from a 401k. If you don't need the money, you could increase your 401k contribution to get to lower the income, or you might be able to do a spousal IRA to reduce the income to give more of that, make that credit more available. The nice thing about IRAs, if you have a chance to do a deductible IRA, if it were to help in this case, in that story of someone working over age 65, is that you have until April 15th to make decisions about contributions to IRAs, whether they're deductible or not deductible, and you do backdoor Roths or you do Roths. So there's also going to be some other changes to catch-up contributions in 2026 if you're making more than a certain amount of money, and I'll try to talk about those next week. And I didn't really get to talk about charitable giving, but qualified charitable distributions out of the IRAs, my very favorite way to do it. 70 and a half or older, if you haven't already done your IRA and you're charitably inclined, out of your charitable giving out of your IRA could lower your income enough to maybe help you get that enhanced credit. All right, folks, we are done. I was going to say the phone number again. Coming up next week, again, year-end financial planning takeaways, and I'll touch on some of the things I missed tonight. And coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Bridger, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Remember, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week. Thank you.